Columbia Workshop.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Deems Taylor speaking. As most of you probably know, the Columbia Broadcasting System has just commissioned 6 American composers to write 6 orchestral works designed primarily to be heard over the radio. 2 of them, Aaron Copland and Roy Harris, are in the studio tonight. And the other 4, Louis Greenbelt, Howard Hanson, Walter Piston, and William Grant Still, are listening in. They are listening because this broadcast is not only for your enjoyment, but also for their information. We want to show them something. I'll explain just what it is that we want to show them, and you, after you've heard the first number on tonight's program, an orchestral arrangement of one of a group of pieces that the great French composer Claude Debussy wrote for his little daughter, called The Children's Corner. This particular piece, played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under Howard Barlow, is The Gollywog's Cakewalk. What you have just heard is Debussy's Gollywog's Cakewalk, scored for the average symphony orchestra for performance in the average concert hall. What we want to show you and the 6 composers of the Columbia Commission is that besides the tonal effects produced by traditional symphonic orchestration, there exists today a vast treasury of tone colors invented and developed by radio orchestras with which the average symphonic composer is unfamiliar. Perhaps I'd better define tone color. It's the effect upon the ear produced by combinations of instruments. For example, the sound of a number of stringed instruments, violins, violas, cellos, and basses playing together is one tone color. The sound of a group of brass instruments playing together is another. And the sound of woodwinds, flutes, clarinets, oboes, bassoons, still another. Besides these simple tone colors, there are others, more complicated and more subtle, produced by combining instruments of different families and by altering the manner in which the instruments are played. Now, radio, as I say, has produced a large variety of tone colors that are as yet unused in serious music. This development came about in a very natural way. The bulk of the music that you hear on your radio set is, for better or worse, dance music. Now, the average dance number is played on a broadcast or in a nightclub, consists of one popular tune, that is a strain of 8, 16, or 24 bars, repeated over and over. In order to counteract the monotony of this endless repetition, the radio or jazz band arranger tricks your ear by shifting the tune to various keys, or by playing it in various ingenious new combinations of instruments. Some of these combinations and effects are produced by variations in methods of playing. Others owe their existence to the peculiar mechanical conditions of broadcasting, whereby, owing to the fact that a player can step up close to the microphone with the rest of the orchestra in the background, he can produce solo effects that would be ineffective or even inaudible if played in a concert hall. Up to now, most of these new tone colors have never been used in serious music, and we think they might be. And so tonight, we're going to play you 3 familiar compositions by 3 great masters. First in conventional symphonic orchestration, and then as rescored by a master of modern radio technique, Amadeo De Filippi. You have already heard part of the Gollywog's Cakewalk in the official orchestration by Mouton. And now before Mr. Barlow conducts Mr. Filippi's version, let me show you a few of his orchestral effects and the way they're produced. Early in the piece, for example, comes a brief passage for saxophones and bassoon, in which the instruments are blown in a peculiar way known as slap-tonguing, answered by the brass instruments, trumpets and trombones, played with what are called wah-wah mutes. A few bars further on, we have a slap-tongued saxophone carrying the air, accompanied by violins and a slow glissando, that is, a sliding up and down the scale with no perceptible break between the notes. Now the saxophones take the melody, followed by the flutes and clarinets against a background of saxophones and brasses playing flutter-tonguing. This last is a method of playing wind instruments whereby the player vibrates his tongue rapidly. Very much as you do when you're cold, you know, and you say brrr. Next, the trumpet plays the melody, the player alternately opening and closing the bell of the instrument with the palm of his hand. At the end of the passage, something that an old-time symphony player would claim to be impossible, a trumpet glissando. And now a short passage for woodwind and horns with a plucked string accompaniment. Any symphonic composer would write this, but what he wouldn't write is the ingenious rhythmic effect produced by the little wooden percussion instrument known as Chinese woodblocks or temple blocks. The last four bars are unusual. A glissando for the harp, followed by a glissando for clarinet and kettle drums. Two effects that, as any old school symphony player will tell you, are impossible. Now that we've analyzed a few of the effects, suppose we hear the whole piece. Debussy's Gollywog's Cakewalk, scored for radio orchestra by Amadeo De Filippi and conducted by Howard Barlow. Now that we've heard a grotesque number, let's see what the radio orchestra can do with the lyric work. But before we get into that, let me go a little more fully into one effect that occurred at the very end of the Gollywog's cakewalk, the timpani glissando. The timpani, or kettle drums, as they've existed in the symphony orchestra for nearly two centuries, are the only instruments of the drum family that produce a definite note that can actually be tuned. This tuning is done by tightening a series of screws around the head of the instrument, and as there are eight of these screws, the tuning process naturally takes time. If you've been to a symphony concert, you've probably noticed the kettle drum player at the back of the orchestra apparently smelling his instrument during the soft passages. He isn't smelling them, he's tuning up and putting his ear close to the drum to see if he has the note right. And owing to this laborious process of tuning, there are usually three kettle drums in a symphony orchestra. Now, in recent years, an instrument has appeared on the market known as the pedal kettle drum, in which the instrument is tuned instantly, not by tightening screws, but by the pressure of the player's foot on a pedal placed at the base of the instrument. You won't find many of them in symphony orchestras, but almost every broadcasting station has one. On this new instrument, the player, for example, if he wants to play the notes F and C, instead of needing two drums, one tuned in F and one tuned in C, can play both notes on one instrument, like this. Not only that, but he can play a whole scale on one drum. Or he can play a chromatic passage, glissando, like this. Now that's what radio has done for one instrument of the orchestra. Another thing, of the three pieces we're playing this evening, two were written originally not for orchestra but for piano. Now we made this choice deliberately for the simple reason that we didn't want to seem to be criticizing the orchestral technique of the master we're playing. We didn't want to seem to be saying, this is how Debussy would have written for the orchestra if he'd known his business. He knew his business. All we want to suggest is that there are some new orchestral tone colors available in addition to those that already exist. We don't want to create a new musical language. We only wish, with all respect, to add a few new words to the existing vocabulary. Now, suppose we take our lyric piece. Robert Schumann's well-loved Tornoi, played first in Theodore Moses' arrangement for string orchestra, conducted by Howard Barlow. Now let's see what Mr. De Filippi does with Tormelai. He scores the opening phrase for brass, playing with cup mute. First, let me show you how the passage sounds as played with straight mute, the ordinary mute used by all symphony players. Now here's the same passage, played by the brass, using a mute that is familiar to all radio orchestras, the cup mute. Now comes a passage played by a solo trombone, using a cup mute, and answered by another trombone using what is known as a Harmon mute. Now A little further on, we hear the opening phrase again, this time played by a quartet of saxophones. They're answered by the brass section, this time using still another variety of mute known as the solo tone mute. By the way, I'm assuming that you know that a mute for a brass instrument is a metal or fiber appliance that is thrust into the bell of the instrument, which lessens the volume of sound, but as you've heard, alters the quality of the sound. These different varieties of brass mutes are one of the important contributions to music made by the American Jazz Band and Radio Orchestra. Now we come to another effect, one that belongs solely to radio, the subtone clarinet. This is a tone produced by a peculiar method of blowing the instrument, which in a concert hall would be almost inaudible at a distance of, 15 feet. Thanks to the fact that in a broadcasting studio, the player can stand within a foot of the microphone, the tone is perfectly audible, even with an accompaniment of brass instruments, as you hear now. Now we have an effect that is seldom heard in concert, a solo for the double bass in its highest register. And now suppose we hear the whole piece. Schumann's Träumerei, as scored for radio by Amadeo De Filippi, and played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under Howard Barlow. Let me make one comment and explanation. It may seem to some of you that these arrangements of Mr. DeFilippi's are almost too elaborate, and that the effects, some of them lasting only 3 or 4 bars, tread upon each other's heels so fast that the final result is almost too colorful, too rich. Well, that may be so, but let me remind you that tonight you're not at a concert. You're in a laboratory. Mr. DeFilippi is trying to show you and our 6 composers what can be done, not necessarily what should be done all the time. If we succeed in giving you some idea of the resources of the modern radio orchestra, we shall have accomplished what we set out to do. And now for our 3rd number, the Farandole from Georges Bizet's La Lesienne suite. Here's part of it as Bizet wrote it. Let us see how a modern radio arranger translates this music into orchestral terms. First is the opening theme played by the strings col legno. This is a method of playing whereby the musician taps the strings with the wood of the bow. It's an effect frequently written for the concert hall but seldom heard because the listener hears all bows and no notes. In the studio with the players near the microphone, the notes are, as you hear now, perfectly distinguishable. Now a passage for trumpets, played with still another mute known as the gabbo mute. The tone produced by this mute is almost too delicate for the concert hall, but is perfectly effective through the microphone. It is accompanied by strings playing pizzicato glissando, that is, plucked with a sliding tone comparable to that produced by a Hawaiian steel guitar. Next, a passage for brass instruments using cup mutes, this time playing short, detached notes. Now the brass is playing without mutes, but with felt hats hung over the bells of the instruments. just one solo that would be very difficult to make effective on the concert stage, but which is very much so over the microphone. A bassoon playing in its low register against an accompaniment of high muted strings and celeste. And now let's hear the whole thing. The Farandole from Bizet's Arlesian Suite, rescored for radio by Amadeo De Filippi with profound apologies to Georges Bizet and played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Howard Barlow.
Tonight, the Columbia Workshop has brought you a special broadcast demonstrating the use of orchestral instruments developed by radio. The program was called to the special attention of the six American composers who have been commissioned by Columbia to write music for the microphone. Dean Taylor, musical consultant of the Columbia Network, wrote the comments which he made, and the special musical arrangements were made by Amadeo De Filippi. Howard Barlow conducted the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. The Columbia Workshop, which is under the general direction of Irving Reese, was directed tonight by Davidson Taylor. A recent Columbia Workshop program presented with a marked success a radio version of the first half of Hamlet. In response to the demands of listeners to that broadcast, the same director and cast will conclude the presentation of Hamlet on the workshop period next week at this same time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.